This podcast is brought to you by Most Valuable Podcasts, leading the league in podcasting entertainment.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages. This is the Fast Break Podcast. I'm your host, Sean Anderson. Alongside me is Ricky Whitmer.
What's up, guys?
And Dave Oster.
Hey, everybody.
And we are the Fast Break Podcast. This is the third time we're trying this intro.
It's been a long day.
We've been giggling a lot. We're shooting this way later than we usually do. But we are back. Dave's back from vacation that you did not see. Yep. And we're going to be ranking the top 30 starting shooting guards in the NBA. We're using the depth charts from realgm.com. You can find what guys we are actually ranking, and some guys right now we're in the part where not everyone is in the system or in the right place, so there might be some guys that are going to be lower that might not actually be starting, but we'll get into that. We're just ranking it as of August 27th, so let's get into this. And one thing I do want to say about small forwards, we actually get into the rankings, mm-hmm. is Dave brought this up, and small forwards are kind of like a unicorn. It's hard to rank them all because they're all unicorns. They're all nice and
they're
lovely.
All special in their own way.
They are all special in their own way. You got some all-around players who can do everything around the court. You got guys who can put up 20 a night but can't play defense the other side. You got skilled shooters. You got defenders only. And then you got your list of superstars. And there's a lot of guys that fall into those places. And it's hard to finally get a true ranking of these guys. So like when you guys were looking at these small forwards, what was like the key stat for you to look at and for these rankings? Or is it more of their play on the court than the actual stats?
Well, this one, it all, like with point guards, it was, I'm looking at how much you score and assists is kind
how
of much a big
you,
one.
How well you facilitate.
Yeah, how much you facilitate.
And turnovers too.
With shooting guards, it was mainly, okay, how much you score, rebounds, and then kind of assists and some defense.
Hayden on the Harden.
With this one, it's the... With me, this is the most complete of a position because it's like
you gotta fill out everything.
Okay, here's your stats, but what do you bring to your team? Because like you said, every team might use you could use a small forward like a big down low. You can use them like a shooting guard on the perimeter.
You can use them like a point four.
But this is one where
point
it's like
forward.
Okay, here's what you got. What do you bring to your team? And that is me outside the top 10, maybe even like. To maybe 13. After 13, it was like, fuck, where do I put these guys?
Mm-hmm. It's extremely close, like you were saying, because everyone brings something unique to their team. Mm-hmm. And the weirder thing is when some of these guys switch teams, it's different. I mean, and that's what fucks things up even more because we're trying to take a look at what have you done for us and what are you going to do on your new team with your new system.
Like I think of Evan Turner. Yeah, with the Boston Celtics, he was pretty good. But now what is he going to do now that he's no longer in Boston?
But he also kind of fell in that position where I don't know if he's actually the starting small forward, mm-hmm. there because he might be, they might move Alan Crabb there and kind of go off with him and then have Evan Turner play that kind of that same position he mm-hmm. had where he was the sixth man kind of facilitating that second unit. So we'll
give that veteran presence.
Yeah, so we'll definitely see. And we'll see what they kind of can do. Another guy that we had trouble with was Ben Simmons as well. I mean, I didn't know where to put him.
I had him with Dick. He's in my top 10. He's in my top 10.
Crazy to say for a guy who's never stepped on the court and
crazy
bashing
it is
in the
crazy
summer league.
I may have bashed Ben Simmons, especially in the summer league, but you cannot lie the potential he brings. And when we're talking about him and when we were in the draft, early in the draft process, even late in it, when we're starting to compare him to LeBron, that brings a ton more potential, and
just on that alone,
top 10.
I think that's also, though, if everything goes right. I don't think anyone's actually expecting him to be LeBron.
That's if the stars align, mm-hmm. he can be LeBron James. If they don't align, he's just an okay player. I mean,
if the stars don't align, he's a pretty good player.
Well, I mean, he has the potential to be very good, but he's got a lot of things he's got to work on still. His mm-hmm. outside shooting has looked very poor from his time in college and in the early summer league. So it just kind of comes down to, what is he going to do with that team and how is he going to grow with a four big lineup around them? It's going to be interesting to watch. Does he have potential? You're absolutely right. Mm-hmm. Off the charts. I mean, he's got absolute star written all over him. He can do everything else you need to. His passing is just, it's fantastic to watch because it's something that you don't see out of someone with his size. Mm-hmm. And he just has a touch to the ball that you see usually with point guards, and no, the ball is always in his hands, and he's a natural with it, so that helps it because you see a lot of guys who they're the in betweener, like they get the ball past them and they can drop down low or whatever. No, he's always looking for the open man. He's always looking for how can I get this ball in the hoop the best way for my team. It's never about him. So I like a lot about him. He's not super selfish either. So
yeah, as a 19-year-old, I mean, his basketball IQ is off the charts. But I mean, really, it's more of taking that IQ and putting it towards his game. You're the only one who actually gave him an official ranking, though, because Dave put Ben Simmons with a question mark. Like, I put him at 15.
I want him to be there. I've got him at 14. So I think you and I were like, he's probably going to come in that mid range because. No matter what he's going to do, he's going to be an amazing player to watch on that 76ers team. He's the focal point of that team. I think we can all agree.
Mine was more he's on a bad team. It's his first year. We haven't seen him able to develop a shot. Do I think he'll definitely move up the ladder? I think so, just because of his skill set. But, you know, I can't put him there because he hasn't actually stepped out on the court.
Right. I just think he's going to be, when it comes down to it, I was looking outside of, to me, it was the top eight players I had. I'm like, okay.
That's a lot.
I get to these guys. They are the top eight. But then I got to nine, and it's guys like Danilo Gallinari, Tobias Harris, Jay Crowder, Harrison Barnes. I'm sitting there going, you know what? I feel pretty confident putting Ben Simmons, just based off potential alone, above him.
That's bold.
Above those players.
You're going to get eaten up, especially if you
got
Nuggets
and that's all this is. It's Ben Simmons is, and when you get to any rookie, like Dave mentioned when we did the shooting guards with Brandon Ingram, because you threw that out there.
I feel like he's going to be a shooting guard.
Even though Clarkson
year one
was on number one on the depth chart for a real GM.
Correct.
This is all, when it's all rookies, it's all potential of what they can be. Even D'Angelo Russell, it's kind of like, yeah, we got to see what you did last year, but your coach didn't really play you, didn't really like you. So yours is also a little potential with this. It's all of, this is what I expect to see. I expect to see him come in and he'll be a guy where you're sitting there going, yeah, top 10 for sure. Top 10 small forwards if he's locked into that position.
Out of first-year players and rookie, he is the highest player that we have put up in here. And Ben Simmons coming in at 12 officially. I had him at 15. Dave had him at 14. And Ricky had him at 9, ended up at 12. And we have all of those full links. If you do want to check out our full rankings, you could check that out on mostvaluablepodcast.com. Just find the Fast Break podcast, and the rankings will be in the...
links also down below in the description.
Bio. It's also... Thank you, always. Ricky. This is the guy who sets it up and does everything here. So he knows what he's doing. Let's get into the bottom half and work our way up back up to Ben Simmons.
The clusterfuck, basically.
All right, no. This one's easy. If I may, Sean. Yeah. If I may. We have the one and only Kyle Singler.
Garbage.
Look, this man does not deserve to be on a basketball. You know how they're always like, look, they're
does
the best.
Does not deserve to be on a basketball team?
Yeah, you heard.
Christ.
Look, you know when they're like, well, these are the best 600 athletes. I think it's 600 for the NBA.
Yeah.
And it's like, in the world. So, like, when you look at them, like, that's crazy. And it's like, I can't think of the Olympics. It's like, let's have the average man run the 100 versus Usain Bolt. But, like, I feel like Kyle Singler is the average man for the NBA. Like, I feel like if I worked out for 6 months, I think I could do what Kyle Singler does, and I'm a 6 foot nothing white guy with no talent.
See, but we say that though, and Kyle Singler was also pretty good in college. So I mean, I don't know.
I have no respect for
you.
The
know,
man.
Easily the worst.
You know what?
Forward,
I'm
going to
go ahead
starting
and say because I know Kyle's watching right now. Kyle, if you're watching and listening, you contact us at our email that's on the page.
Yep.
You'll go one on one v Dave. Show him up.
Longtime fan of the show, Kyle Singler. So
yeah,
sorry,
yeah.
Kyle.
Feel free to call in next week.
Yes. If you email theonsidekick@gmail.com, we'll set that up. But then, you know, getting out of that, there's guys like Wes Johnson, who's usually in and off the bench. I mean, the Clippers, just their biggest hole is at small forward. He's there at like 27.
Yeah, he's a stopgap, pretty much. He fills that spot. He doesn't do anything great for them, but he's not like a dark hole on that team because he is a capable defender. He can, well, his shooting's not great. He can shoot, though. He can play average. No, he's below average. I'm trying to save him here. I really am.
Look,
Clippers, I'm trying to help you, but no. You need to find a replacement.
He's a bench player. He's a bench player.
He's
not a bad bench player.
No.
But he's a bad starting small forward. I mean, really, I mean, from the guys from 27 to 30, Kyle Singler, Wes Johnson, PJ Tucker, and Dante Cunningham, those guys should not be your starting small forwards.
Correct.
Can those guys be on your NBA team outside of Kyle Singler? Yeah. Those guys aren't bad players.
Outside of Kyle Singler?
Like, Dante Cunningham, shooting 31% as, you know, kind of a power forward, small forward mix, that's not bad. I mean, you could definitely be like that. PJ Tucker, he shouldn't be the starting small forward for the Suns, but as a backup, he's not bad. Wes Johnson, same thing. He should not be starting on that Clippers team. But then we get into, like, 26 to 20, where we have young guys who either haven't proven themselves or have been injured, or the old guards that we have been all-stars before and are kind of on that downturn. You know, Evan Turner's in there as well. But, you know, Evan Turner, we have Justice Winslow at 27, young player, first year last year, we heard all about this defense, couldn't get in there. So, looking at that, 20 to 26 mark, what guys are you kind of...
Justice Winslow.
Looking at to make a jump?
Oh, to make a jump?
Yeah.
Still, Justice Winslow. He's the guy on this list that I was like, if coming out of the draft last year... I was like, this guy is going to be good. Miami got a steal. Yep. Well, this guy is going to be great. And then it's like, what the fuck did you do? You didn't do anything. And he's a guy that maybe because D-Wade's not going to be there, opens up some more opportunities.
He's got to step up.
He has to.
We did a redraft a couple months ago, and I think you had him redrafted at second overall, if I recall correctly.
Or Winslow? Third.
Yeah, I didn't have Winslow second overall.
You had him in your top five, for sure.
No, I did not have him. I don't believe if I did, that is fucking ludicrous.
Go back to our NBA redraft. I'm pretty sure you had him higher than D'Angelo Russell.
I don't think I had him at two.
We'll look. This Heat top team, five, but anyways.
This Heat team needs him to step up because got a question mark with Bosch. You lost Wade. You've got a lot of gaps to fill, and he's a versatile guy. Mm-hmm. If he steps up, he can give them a lot of what they need across the board: scoring, rebounding, even not half bad assists. He can move the ball through. He isn't super greedy, so I like him. But at this point, he's shown me nothing.
The benefits of Justice Winslow. I mean, again, he's young, so he completely disappointed. You could still see as a first year player, there were some bright spots, and obviously there were some low spots. So I would probably agree with you. Guy that would take a most jump is Justice Winslow,
he's going to
get
improve.
more minutes. His shot hopefully will improve, and then everything after that. I mean, he's got the athleticism to stay with people on defense. He's got the athleticism to at least take it to the hole. He's got the body to kind of take some damage if he can't take it to the hole. So I mean, he's got everything for him. He just needs to push it forward.
Right.
So I mean,
he's got a big step to take this year.
Yeah, and that movement kind of got freed up with the 22 and 23 guys leaving the Heat: Luol Deng and Joe Johnson. Luol Deng and Joe Johnson, we have them low. And we have him low just because of their age. But, I mean, Joe Johnson coming over the Heat from the Nets, he did show that he can still score a little bit. And I don't think he should be that starting small forward for the Utah Jazz. He's currently slotted in. But as a player off the bench, I think he's still fantastic. And even if he is the starter, I still think you can get by. And same with Luol Deng. Luol Deng, if he's coming off the bench, that's a great sixth man, or that's a great seventh man, a great veteran leadership there. And those guys, they're still capable as starters, but I wouldn't have those be my guys as starters. But still, if they are starting, it's not a downfall.
Do you want my honest answer about why they're so low?
Yeah.
It's because theoretically they have to drop off at some point.
Exactly.
Luol Deng has played more minutes. Like, his knees have to be worse than Kobe's right now, but they're not. He's holding up. He survived the Tom Thibodeau era in Chicago. I know, right? Like, give me something. But holy crap. And he saw a resurgence last year in the playoffs playing power forward, or pseudo power forward for this team. Mm-hmm. And now he goes over to a young team where he can kind of share that veteran presence. He can go through and teach them everything, and he's got a wealth of knowledge. This is a guy who's played under top coaches on fantastic teams, great organizations, who have pushed deep in the playoffs. So look, he is like the number one guy I'd want to have in the locker room. But as far as a starting small forward, I'm not exactly thrilled about it.
But for the Lakers, for the Lakers, isn't anything. I mean, yeah, you lose Kobe, but Brandon Ingram coming in, like Dave, you mentioned last week. Yeah, ideally you'd want him playing small forward, but because of his size, Ingram's probably going to get thrown at the two this year.
Strength, yeah.
I mean, it's better than what you had last year, am I wrong?
Yeah, but I mean, with the Deng thing as well, I mean, he was one of those guys too where Brandon Ingram's not on the depth chart at all. So, I mean, if we do end up seeing Brandon Ingram starting at small forward and then Clarkson at the two and then Russ at the one, I think that maybe what we'll see. And then, the Luol Deng signing will make a lot of sense with him coming off the bench, because again, those miles, it's got to crumble at some point. And that's the thing that we just haven't seen with Luol Deng. We kind of saw it with Joe Johnson a little bit. We saw a sharp decline when he got to Brooklyn, but we still saw he has some left in the tank.
He got his money, which you got to give him credit. I mean, a lot of those superstars miss their windows and they don't get paid. He got paid.
He did get paid, and someone else who got paid in the 15 to 20 range, Kent Bazemore. We have him at 17, and Kent Bazemore is a guy who I think he's going to fall off a lot.
I think he had an up year.
I think he didn't even have an up year.
That's true.
He had a down year from his up year.
Yeah, he peaked a couple years ago. Well, peaked. He had his best year a couple years ago.
He's still 27, 26.
Bazemore, he fits the system. He's an average player, though. It's just timing. I really think that he's going to give you a good minutes, good numbers, and he's a solid shooter. So, honestly, it's like vanilla. He's a good small forward. He is a average in this league, absolutely.
I think Kent Bazemore, though, the one thing I was thinking about with him, and this was looking at like his stats last year, he's a guy that I would fit and say, you know what, he just fits with Atlanta. He fits with what the system that they run with. Because I'm trying to think of their head coach's name, and it's just blanking on me. It comes from the Popovich kind tree. Of a Buttonhoser. Tree. Buttonhoser, thank you. And Button. It's just he just fits a Buttonhoser offense and defense and just overall system. So maybe just for Atlanta, that's where he fit in nicely.
See, but now, I mean, Korver's getting older. Korver's not – we saw the decline of Korver a little bit last year. I mean, he still shot 40% from three, but, you know, that went from 49.
That's like peasant level for Korver. Like, that's an off year.
So we don't know if he'll still be at that level last year or that he was at last year shooting 40%. So now we're going to see Bazemore kind of be thrown into that spotlight. Jeff Teague's gone. So now we're going to see, you know, full Kent Bazemore here, and we'll see if he can actually take over because, you know, no more Horford, no more Teague, you know, Korver's on the downside of his career. We're going to see if Kent Bazemore can actually take that step up. And if there's a guy in that, like, 17 to, like, probably 24 range, I would even throw, like, Luol Deng and Joe Johnson in there. I would say he might be the one that falls the farthest. I think he might be the most overrated player that we have here. And I'm saying that when, you know, he's ranked 17 and I had him at 18.
Yep.
But you know, it's just he's got everything there. But he's not like a Justice Winslow where he can take another year to develop. He needs to take that jump or it's just going to be, you know, Kent Bazemore, we're going to completely know what Kent Bazemore has to offer in the NBA. And kind of, you know, when we're talking about guys that can just, small forwards, they're guys that are kind of niche players. 17 through 20 are kind of your shooters. You got Kent Bazemore, Damari Carroll, who can also play great defense but was injured last year. Otto Porter, who's more of a scorer, kind of developed that three-point shot last year.
Don't ask him to play defense on Jimmy Butler, though.
Oh, yeah. God.
Jimmy will shake and bake him all the way across the court.
And then you got Bojan Bogdanovic as well as 20, who actually played very well in the Olympics for Serbia. Don't want to bring up the Olympics because Ricky got pissed off.
We had a little bit of ISO talk. Dave, you said with Boban, you actually wanted to...
Bojan.
You wanted to mention his Olympic play played well into your rankings of him.
Yeah, and he did step up a lot. He did miss that key three-pointer at the end of the U.S. game that, you know, it would have been great if he would have hit it, yes, but look.
Well,
he,
great for them, not for us.
I think it would have been a swift kick in the ass for us. Needed it. But no, honestly, he played well, slightly a chucker. I'm a little worried about that, but look, percentage-wise, he's fine. I think he's going to take a bigger step in this team now. And I really
think with a Jalen
helping out run that offense, I think he'll see more and more growth as he goes. Look, I'm optimistic about him. I want to say I'm high. I'm optimistic about him because they're still the Nets.
Yeah, they're still the Nets.
They're a bad team. It's going to run through Brook Lopez, and that's just how it works. But he's got a chance to be their number two guy and just take way more shots, soak up more time. And I think he's going to be a good player. But it really comes down to what is the line in the sand for how many shots he can just chuck? Because no offense, but I got a category of chuckers and he's in it.
Yeah. I mean, chuckers, there's a lot of them. Chandler Parsons might be in there. Kent Bazemore kind of fits in that role as well. But, I mean, guys that, you know, Damari Carroll, I mean, if he can come back from injury, that's a guy that you know, he'll be in that mid-level range because he's good on defense, he's good on offense, at least from a three-point standpoint. So
he's one of those system guys that I feel like he fit better in Atlanta than he does in Toronto, but he can still be a good piece for them.
A lot of people fit better in Atlanta. I mean, Atlanta's a good system.
San Antonio, too, and therefore, you know, role players exceed their expectations there.
One guy that you kept talking about, though, during our rankings is at 21. You had him at 18. Ricky had him at 19.
I want to have him higher.
Unfortunately,
but I
had him pretty low at 25. The reason I had him so low was because of injuries. Yeah. That's Michael Kidd-Gilchrist. And this is a kid who was phenomenal in the 13 games he played. He's like 21. Well, younger than me, though.
Name, too.
Oh, yeah. Kid.
Come on.
Yeah, all right.
Come on. Come on,
it's
the pun.
It's 10:30 at night. I'm kind of slow right now. But yeah, no, Kidd Gilchrist, you know, dealt with injuries. The first 13 games he played in looked fantastic. He's good on both sides of the ball. Do you think we'll see that jump, especially now that, you know, he's going to see more of a reliance on him because, you know, we saw people move from Charlotte. Now they're going to, you know, get Kidd Gilchrist back. If he can stay healthy, do you think we'll actually see the final jump for Kidd Gilchrist? Or do you think we'll kind of see him slotted at that 21 where he will be kind of that person who's more of a bench player?
Maybe a little bit of a jump, but, like, I mean, looking at his stats his first 4 years in the league, I mean, he's had double-digit points each and every year, and I know you can say, yeah, but Ricky, that second year, he had about 10.7, so it was barely double-digits.
He was also
double
on a
digits.
Bad Charlotte team those
yeah,
first
bad
years.
Charlotte team, and he's also, you look at his average, he's even in the season last year, 13 games, 7.9 rebounds. He's had at least over 7.5 rebounds a year. So he's really, to me, going to be that double-digit guy. Last year in the 13, he still put up 15.6 points per game. So if he can put up maybe at least 17 or 18 points a game, like increase that a little bit.
I don't think he's ever going to get up there.
Have the rebounds to like maybe a solid 8. That would be quality for me on a Charlotte team that – You know, you lose Jefferson, you lose Jalen now, and they need someone to step in.
I don't think he's ever going to get up to 18, just to be honest. I mean, looking at the way
he
plays.
I'm not saying he is. I'm saying if he could, that'd be, like, fucking phenomenal.
Yeah, but, I mean, the way that offense runs, I mean, Kemba's going to be your guy with the ball most of the time. I mean, he's a guy that drives the hoop. I mean, mm-hmm. I think he's shot a total of 25 threes in his 4 years. I mean, yeah, one of them was a seven-game season, but still, I mean, he shot a total of 25 games, so it's not like he's going to be able to park it outside.
Mm-hmm.
I think maybe if he's able to step it up a little more on defense, get those steals, and then go on fast break runs or something like that, I think that might help him.
How many more points do you think he needs to average if we're sitting 15th to base?
I think if he sat at 12, where he was playing last year, if he can sit at 12 mm-hmm. and then just up those rebounds and maybe
so
up those assists as
so
well.
So he doesn't even need to get back to that 15 that he was at even through those first few games he played last year?
He was at 12 last year.
I have 15 on here, where I'm looking at basketballreference.com.
I'm looking at ESPN. They have him at 12.7 points. So
you guys aren't talking about the right one, though. Games played.
Yeah.
Jesus
well, that's
Christ,
why,
people.
That's
how fuck games played?
That's why I
he
said, can he hold up?
He played seven games last year.
He played seven games, 55 before that, 62, 78. He's never
exactly.
even played 82. I mean, since he came into the league, he didn't play 82.
Honestly, his top end is probably like a 16-8 guy, and that'll be great. But he needs to play at least 70 games. Mm-hmm. And that's the biggest thing. Look, if he puts up 16-8 in 70 games, fucking that's fantastic. I throw a party. I'm having a great time. And this looks like one of those, like, hey, he's finally, like, turned the corner. Because this is a kid who has just suffered through bad injuries, missed games so much. And you want him to succeed because he came in the league so young with so much potential. And I feel like he's kind of gotten, like, pushed mm-hmm. aside and, like, totally written off by people. I feel like if he has another year where he doesn't play at least 50 games, he's done. Like, he's done with this team, not done in the NBA because he's mm-hmm. a 6'7", 230 guy with athleticism.
So he has to have the numbers.
Someone will pick it up.
He has to have the numbers that he had last year in limited games, but the amount of games that he played his rookie year.
He needs at least 50 games and to put up 12-6 or 13-6, something like that.
Well, I'm even saying I'm going above that. I'm looking at the rookie season where he played above 70.
See, but that was also on a bad Charlotte team. That was on a bad Charlotte team where there was
point,
not a lot of scores.
Realistically, the number three guy on that team. So, from a scoring standpoint.
Mm-hmm. I would even say Marvin Williams might have jumped him on the four. I don't think you need him to be a scorer. I think you need him to be kind of...
He's a defender.
He's a defender. I think he can be a guy who can mismatch on defense, a guy who can shut down the other guy, and then he could get fast break points or transition points.
Out. It's
exactly.
He is more of that defender, but he doesn't bring that three ball, so now he's a defender, and he's got the athleticism to, like you said, it's the, mm-hmm. the fast breaks. He can get down there really quickly. He can definitely work in the paint. Mm-hmm. He was shooting a crazy high percentage. I think it was upper 40s to low 50s for his entire time in the NBA. But again, I need to see at least I want 70 games and 16-8. What I'm probably going to settle for is 50 games and, you know, 15 or 14-6.
I think if he plays 70 games, has from like 12 to 14, can up those rebound numbers and up those
up
assist
the
numbers.
Chart he goes
yeah.
then. Absolutely.
I think if he can just be that guy who can be either a lockdown defender or put up like 15 and mm-hmm. 8, I think that's going to be something that's really going to help him. But I think that what you brought up is he just needs to play games. He needs to be on the court for Charlotte, especially with their depleted offseason where they didn't have the cap salary to bring these guys back and didn't have enough to retool their team that made it to the playoffs. Let's get into the top 15 now. We got Rudy Gay, Chandler Parsons, Jay Crowder. We got our boy Ben Simmons, and we got Tobias Harris. That's from 11 to 15. Out of those guys, what are the guys that you either think is overrated, underrated, might be taking the big jump? We already talked a little about Ben Simmons, but what guys are you really focusing in on saying they're overrated, well, underrated?
Not an overrated thing, but he was a hard guy to really rank for me was Tobias Harris, because I was looking at the stats, and the one that jumped out to me was his points per game. And I want to say it was like 15, 16 points per game. I'm like, wow, that's pretty good. And I'm like, oh, he should be above Harrison Barnes because Harrison Barnes only had 11. But then I was thinking, wait a second. Harrison Barnes played a completely different role on that Warrior team than Tobias Harris played. So Harris, to me, it wasn't a should he be higher, should he be lower. It was just a where do I put this guy when I've got, for me, like guys like Danilo Gallinari, Harrison Barnes, Jay Crowder in that same kind of an area.
Yeah, Tobias Harris was significantly better, though, since he went over to Detroit. Mm-hmm. The first 49 games he played in Orlando, averaging around 13 points.
He was working with a better coach in
Stan Van, better supporting cast. You know, they didn't have 10 starters out there.
But he's still even upped his... Well, now they have 10 starters. Now they
gotcha.
Have, after
gotcha,
he left.
Orlando.
In Orlando, he's only shooting around 31% for three. Now he's up to like 37,
yeah,
where he was previous years.
47 and 37 for shooting percentages. You're in the green. You're
91 from free
right.
throw line, too.
Exactly.
91% from the free throw line.
He absolutely hit his stride with Detroit late in that season. I think that was, honestly, I didn't expect him to be that good coming into Detroit. I was like, oh, yeah, he's good. He'll fill in pretty okay, but it's not going to change their team much. No. This offense changed. The way they play as a team has changed because of Tobias Harris being there. Mm-hmm. And I'm high on him. I think he's got. I don't want to cap him because right behind him is Stanley Johnson, who's a fucking beast.
Yeah. The Stanimal.
So it's like, am I excited for Tobias? Yes, he had a great year, and I hope he maintains that this year. That's my biggest concern mm-hmm. is he may slide back.
But we might see a jump because he might be able to play those full games with Detroit. I mean, we saw him put up at least 16, so if he can mm-hmm. average those 16 that he did with Detroit, have sure. those same numbers, I mean, that offense is going to be fantastic. I think we all think that, you know, Pistons are a top five team in the East right now,
mm-hmm. yep.
and Tobias Harris is just adding on to that team. Now, I think the way he loses that starting position is if he gets injured and then Stanley comes in and impresses.
And that's another thing, just looking at this Piston team, though. If he does get injured, they're not at a huge fault to me because, no. yeah, they've got Stanley Johnson, but look at two guys they drafted this year in Jibinji and even, I know Ellison's a power forward, but you could, for some situations, whether
we're on a big lineup,
how you want to play that unicorn position to keep the theme of what you said, you could put Henry Ellison there.
Even the Morris they have. I mean, Morris isn't that big of a power forward, so I mean, you can run a fairly larger.
You could put Ellison at the four, and then Marcus over at the three.
You could run a fairly large offense there, but yeah, I think Tobias Harris actually might be taking a jump over. He might be able to take a jump because. Well, not even Danilo. Danilo might fall off shooting wise or point wise, just because Moutier is going to grow as a player, and Jokic is going to grow as a player.
We hope.
It's Harrison Barnes is the big one for the jump because how is he going to play in Dallas?
Yeah, how is he going to be
a
as
bigger role
the guy
than he did
or more
in
of
Dub
the guy.
Nation? Yeah,
yeah, because I mean, you know, it's still Dirk's team at some points because you know Dirk still put up like 18 as a 38-year-old, but still now Harrison Barnes is now going to have to prove that he was worth an Olympic. A roster spot. He's going to have to prove that he was worth that money. And, you know, technically, I think he's the guy that can either supplant his spot as a top 10 small forward, or
he's got
the
most to lose.
Yeah, I think he's got the most to lose. I think that's a perfect way to put it. Or he's going to completely fall off, and he's going to fall into a Rudy Gay or Trevor Ariza area where he's a specialty player and not a guy you can rely on. I think Harrison Barnes, if we're talking about guys that can move up or move down, mm-hmm. Harrison Barnes is the guy that's going to make the biggest flop or he's going to actually prove himself.
Well, I look at their team and it's like, of course. Dirty Dirk is going to be the guy you say is
he's
the number one guy for Dallas. But I'm looking at Deron Williams and Matthews, and neither of those two guys are guys that I'm confident going, yeah, that's my number two.
They're a little long in the tooth.
It may have to be you know, Harrison Barnes is our number two.
Oh, Harrison Barnes is the two.
He's our number two guy, yeah.
I mean, well, if you look at Dallas, they've never had a guy who is the number two. They've always had guys
around Dirk. And veterans.
Exactly. They have guys around Dirk. So Harrison Barnes is probably going to be, you know, the guys around Dirk. But, you know, if Dirk isn't able to step up, or Dirk is, you know, Dirk's age finally catches up with him, or, you know, injuries happen.
Maybe he goes on a San Antonio schedule and only plays like 50 games.
Yeah, if Dirk's not able to keep up with it with an NBA season, not saying he can't, but no. if he's not able to, you know, Harrison Barnes is that guy that's most likely going to be looked at and say, all right, kid, now it's your turn. And I think that's either going to completely make or break Harrison Barnes, not only, you know, career in Dallas, but just career in general, because, you know, he's 26, 25, around there. He needs to finally prove that he can be in the NBA as a starter.
Yeah, going from the eighth option on the best team in the league to now you're the number two option.
He's not hidden anymore.
Yeah. But, you know, the weird thing is I was looking through, like, different things on Reddit about, you know, percentage of open threes, and it's weird because the Warriors, had the highest percentage of made open threes, but below average as far as open threes given to them by percentage. So it's like, so their offense, well, it looked like, you know, the passing the ball around the court, everybody was open. It wasn't really that way. You know, Atlanta saw far more than they did, but couldn't turn that into points. So I think a lot of the argument against Harrison Barnes, outside of the playoff disaster, like dumpster fire, whatever you want to call that, was the, oh, well, he only takes the easy shots. Well, no, it doesn't actually work like that. I mean, he may get some, but by far the Warriors were average as far as those potential chances. So,
well, and it comes with the system that they're running. Well, the way I kind of saw most of his shots, especially in the playoffs this past year, that he missed were open shots.
Well, that's because they didn't guard him.
Well, yeah.
Who's going to make it?
It was one of those things.
Go ahead,
where
take your chance. You're not going
to
make it.
It was just like by the time they passed it to him, they were obviously passing it to him because he was open.
Yeah.
And you're going to take that kind of a shot over a contested one.
And that's one thing that it's like, all right, there was so much pressure on him in the finals because he was open. He was the guy that they needed to make a shot. And now if he's going to a place in Dallas where he might need
too.
To be that guy.
But think of the market. You're going from, you know, over in Los Angeles. Shit's going crazy over there, and you're living the life. To now you're in Dallas. No offense, but the media doesn't give a fuck about you.
Here's the
about
one,
the Mavericks.
Right.
The media in Dallas is still big. Yeah,
they're big, but they're the Mavericks, football. I feel like are hidden in a shadow. The same way San Antonio has been one of the top teams for the last two decades combined.
When we talk about the Mavericks, who are we really talking about?
Mark Cuban.
But the one thing I want to bring up that kind of goes for what you said with the Mavericks. Most of the time, it's Dirk and just a collection of veterans behind him, if they go with that same kind of a mindset, that could actually help Harrison Barnes. Because when we looked at the bench for the Warriors, what did we look at it as? Did we look at it as one guy, two guys? No, we looked at it as a collection, and he was a part of that collection. So maybe he can have the same mindset with, hey, I'm just a part of this collection behind Dirk.
So I feel if people are looking at this right now, I think the most overrated player are the people that say we're completely crazy. I think that person might be Harrison Barnes. So basically what we're saying
Ben Simmons or Harrison Barnes. Over
Well, basically what we're saying is Harrison Barnes, we know you're watching. Prove yourself, kid. We know, longtime fan, Harrison Barnes.
And this is all
along
for
Kyle Singler. They watch
this
together.
And I got to say this. This is all for what we think they're going to do starting day one, not at the end of the season.
Well, these are their expectations.
And Harrison Barnes he's one of the guys that we mentioned at the beginning. The guy's changing to a different team obviously going to have a new role than he did in Dumb Nation.
Yeah. And meanwhile, he's filling in there for Chandler Parsons.
That's what I was going to bring up.
Chandler Parsons. Podcast. And I know, right? I just pull it out of
Wavelengths.
The
map. Wavelengths.
But you got similar guys between Chandler Parsons, Jay Crowder, and Trev Ariza, who all fill a similar niche, but obviously Jay Crowder brings that extra defensive toughness. Chandler Parsons has a better shot, and Trev Ariza is kind of the mix of the two, I feel.
And that's why he's a little lower. It's because he's not one of those guys that you can rely on.
He overall exceed
in
one under the other, but he does them both well enough.
He's there.
Yeah.
Trev Ariza is there. He's good at being there, but he's not going to be a guy where, all right, last second shot, we're going to give it to Trev Ariza. You can do that with Parsons. you can do that with Parsons.
And the one thing
about
Parsons is he's going over to a Memphis team that has
paid.
He's going over to a Memphis team that has a lot better of a point guard than Dallas had.
Really?
Mike Conley compared to Darren Williams.
The almost all-star.
The Mike Darren Conley. Williams that I only remember him as an Illinois Fighting Illini. Just forget his NBA
You don't remember him. He was good in Utah. And then he got paid because he was good in Utah, yeah. And then sucked in Brooklyn.
He was okay. At this point, because of everything
if
else,
you're
I don't remember
Illini
his
fan, you should be boasting about his time in Utah. That guy was an all-star in Utah.
Yeah, I'll take that last year in Illinois.
With
Mike Conley, never all-star.
With Parsons, real quick, I do want to say he's kind of in that area where, all right, get on the floor because he's never played a full season. He's been in that 60 to 70 range, and at times, you know, last year shooting 41% from three, so obviously he has that shot there. But then again, Chandler Parsons is a guy who didn't really fit in Houston, did not fit in Dallas. It's going to be tough with a guy who, you know, they don't have Jaeger there anymore. You're going to have to corral in Parsons and be like, all right, you need to be here. You need to be in this a part of this team here. You know, he's going to be the third option behind Conley and Gasol. Maybe even he'll probably be Z-Bo. Mixed with Z-Bo there too. But I mean, it's most likely going to be like, all right, Conley, Gasol pick and roll. Conley's going to dish it out to Parsons and then maybe he'll give it down to Z-Bo. So that's why I'm thinking more third option.
Fair enough.
Parsons is going to need to step up, and he's going to need to be a guy that can score and put up around 15 or 16 like he did in Houston and the first year in Dallas. I think that's where he's going to need to be and not in that 13 range where he was last year.
My major concern for him, like you said, is that fit on the team. Mm-hmm. And because I remember the good old days with Parsons and Jay Lynn together, like the bromance, like he rocked it. I rocked on the Rocket. Sorry.
Good one.
He had a great time. And I think that
he had a blast.
You look you just destroyed that. But Sean, what I'm really trying to say here is it does matter about that fit on the team, and he did take a big contract. He's going to a new city, and I'm a little worried about the fit and the expectations and the pressure getting to him. I know Memphis, again, not a big city, but at the same time, it's everything around it, and then fitting into a team that notoriously has played through their bigs. That's how they've dominated. Not dominant. That's how they've gotten where they are now. They've been consistently in
the playoffs.
Consistent playoff team and dominating through the bigs. So it's like, look, you're going to see open looks, like you said. You just have to take advantage of that, and he needs to be a lights-out shooter again.
We scratched the surface with the top 10 with talking about Harrison Barnes a little. Let's jump into it. Number 9, Danilo Gallinari. Number 8, Giannis. Number 7, Wiggins. Let's talk about those three right now before we get into the 6, because the 6 is where we were. Those guys, we all had them in that range, but it was more of, you know, guys that should be in that range. Mm-hmm. Where a guy like Wiggins, young player, rookie of the year player, guys, you know, has lofty expectations as Timberwolves is an up-and-coming team.
Is Wiggins another one where it's kind of, yes, we can see how he's done in the NBA, but is his also a little
bit? Potential.
It's a little bit of potential because of Thibodeau coming in this year.
I think he's still set up for 23, 22. Yeah.
He has 2 complete years in the NBA. He had, like you said, rookie of the year the first year, and then he improved his second year, which, again, not always a given for these guys. So I see continued growth. He, like you said, Tom Thibodeau comes in. You have a great mentor of a head coach who's going to run your knees off, but same time, you're going to be a better player for it at the end of the day. So, look, just Wiggins is way up there in potential. Like, him and Cat are just through the roof with potential because of that system.
And that's the thing. You bring in Tom Thibodeau, so that's going to be more expectations there. You're a former rookie of the year. You stepped it up the year after that. You have Cat, who's now in his second year, who's going to be more fit into that system. LaVine's grown. You're still going to be able to see, you know, all right, the pieces are there. The pieces are growing. You need to grow as well. Yeah. You need to take that jump.
Don't forget the starting point guard and Chris Dunn.
It's going to be Ricky
Dunn.
Rubio.
Yeah. No, I don't know. Chris Dunn, baby.
Well, if people go back to our top 30 starting point guards, Ricky Rubio was there, not Chris Dunn.
Yeah.
Wiggins is a guy that he's going to need to step up. And I think he will be able to do that. And I think he'll still be in that 7 where we have him. I don't think he's going to be jumping into that Carmelo or Butler or
Kawhi
range.
He's got a couple
of
years to establish, but he is already growing to be one of the best scorers in the NBA.
He is. And I think the thing that he needs to do is take over either as a playmaker or develop that outside shot a little more and become dangerous from there. Because I think the player that if we're looking at, he's either going to be Carmelo in the Nuggets days where he's kind of like that player, or Paul George where he can be a complete all-around player.
And that's what I'm hoping for.
I don't think he's going to be a Kawhi where he's going to be a shutdown defender. He's not going to be a Jimmy where Jimmy is a very great all-around player.
You know what,
but
though?
Can't shoot.
Based on the coach coming in, if you were Wiggins, why would I know Paul George is like that's who you want him to be like, because that's like LeBron is kind of
the best
can
player
play
in
anywhere.
The East, not named LeBron James.
Yeah.
KD is one of those players where it's like, yeah, we're going to put him.
You can't be LeBron or KD.
Yeah.
You can't.
And like Paul George, Dave, you said it before we started the podcast, was he's like your prototypical small forward.
He is.
He's the guy. But based on the system coming in with Tom Thibodeau, I'd look and I'd say, hey, if Wiggins developed and became the kind of player that Jimmy is, that would fit the system.
See, but
the
I think he's more of a scorer than Jimmy. Yeah.
I'm not saying they're exactly the same, but like if he could do similar things for that team that Jimmy could do.
He's a huge step ahead of Jimmy. Look, yeah. He came in rookie of the year. He was a high draft pick. First or second overall, he's up there.
He was first.
He was first,
and then traded to Timberwolves for K-Love.
Yeah, so worth it.
I'm not saying
K-Love played defense on one play. It was great. That play mattered.
Don't bash KD.
I'm not saying be the exact K-Love. Same thing.
I know, I look good.
Of course he's going to have a higher ceiling. I hope he's better than Jimmy Butler because of when he came in.
Right.
But it's just do the similar things in that system with Thibodeau coming in.
Oh, yeah. I expect his defense to improve a massive amount just from being under Thibodeau, just from working with these other guys on the team. And look, they're growing. Like you said, they've got the pieces. They're all young. Mm-hmm. They're growing as a team. So as a team, they're going to get better and make each other better. And that's honestly what I'm most excited. I love this Timberwolves team. I just want to watch them. I just want to watch them play.
Can I ask you guys this? This is a totally different question.
Okay, Ricky.
Just looking at the top six of guys that we have, the guys that are locks, at the end of the year, if we did these rankings at the end of the year, do you see Wiggins cracking maybe the top five?
No, not at all. I think he will crack the top six only if Butler falls off. And if Butler can take a step back, I think that's the only way he gets in the top six. I don't think he's beating Carmelo. I don't think he's beating Kawhi. I don't think he's beating Paul George. I don't think he's beating KD. I don't think he's beating LeBron. I think Wiggins needs to step it into the playoffs and then prove that, hey, I'm here. I can be a team leader. I can be the guy you can go to. I think that's going to be where Wiggins takes that jump to superstar level. I think he's right now at a rising superstar. Absolutely. He needs to hit that superstar level, and you're going to do that in the playoffs. You're going to do that in a time where you can be relied on. I think that's going to be the big part there. The guy that I do want to talk about, though, is Giannis, because we have him at 8, and Giannis, we saw what he can do as a point forward. Can he keep that up as the Bucks? He might be one of the players that people are saying in the comments that he's completely overrated because he doesn't have a shot.
Well, what's interesting is Dave had him ranked the highest out of us. You had him ranked the lowest. I was right in between you guys.
Mm-hmm. So satisfied with that, aren't you?
Dave had 7, I had 9, Ricky had 8 for the people who can't see our spreadsheet. But with Giannis, it's more of how is he going to fit into that point forward role? We saw a little bit of it. You know, I think Jason Kidd said that Michael Carter-Williams is still going to be the point guard, but I don't think that's actually going to happen. I believe
Michael Carter-Williams was our worst-rated point guard.
He was. But the thing with Giannis is I want to see him take that next step. You got team wingspan here. You got team length.
Nice.
Can they actually take it? And do you think Giannis will actually cement himself as a top 10 small forward? Because I think we're still dealing with potential here. I think with Giannis, it's still the potential, and we see how well he can do. Do you think he actually will back it up?
Honest answer, what Giannis did, not last year, but the year before, like his second year is what I expect out of Ben Simmons this year. You know, like 12, just shy, like 7, and actually more assists. But it's just the fact that it's like we've seen him grow, and then that little preview we had of him at point forward, whew, that was nice. That worked, and credit due to Jason Kidd, I guess. I mean, I don't know. I don't feel comfortable saying that out loud. Like, just wipe that. That just feels dirty. But no, it worked. And he's one of those guys who he's got the length, but he's also got the handle because growing up, he was always the best player. So he had the ball in his hands. So you have that comfort level. He can dish the ball. It really is going to depend on a lot of the other guys around him, though.
Honestly, the thing that I want to look at with Giannis is the thing that I look at him when I see him play point forward, he's a 6'11 Russ Westbrook.
6'11.
6'11, you know, but anyways, he is you know, 10 inches taller than Russell Westbrook, or you know, how many ever inches he's taller than Russell Westbrook. He just reminds me of a little bit of a slower Russ. I just want to see him take that next step because with Giannis, his play style, can he stay healthy, and then can he dish the ball out efficiently? I mean, because those assist numbers aren't that great.
No, not yet, but they can be.
Yeah, he had a couple triple doubles. So yeah. I mean, when he did,
and I take it back. I mentioned his numbers, and I feel like I undercut Ben Simmons a little. Ben Simmons will have way more assists. He'll have like 8.
Well, in April when he kind of went to that point forward role, he had 7. His stat line was 29 and 7.
Yeah,
I mean that's ridiculous. I mean, I think he can do that a full season? No, but do I think he could? Do I think
he's on a bad Bucks team?
Yeah, but do I think he can put up like 18? You know, 9 and probably 6. I don't think he's going to average 7 assists a game. Do you think Giannis will actually average 7 assists a game?
I want to say yes, but I can't. I'm sorry.
That April was ridiculous.
It
52%
was. It was a great month.
52% from the field. He shot 45% from three. He didn't take that many, but still, 45% is a great percentage there. You know, 76 from free throw, from free throw line. You want to see that step up a little bit. But then again, 9 rebounds, 7 assists,
honest
2
answer,
points,
I
or 20
that,
points.
I think that Dellavedova is probably going to become the starting point guard of this team very quickly.
But,
again,
but he might be
saw.
That shooting guy for him. I think he'll be, because Carter Williams can't shoot. Delly can't.
Right, right. That's the thing is, but Delly also proved at the Olympics he's got all around game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, give him some credit. He played great, and I think that that's going to kind of take in Carter Williams. You'll see as a fill or a six man, and I think Giannis will run. You know, he'll still be point forward for part of the sets, but I think they're going to share time. So I think he's probably going to sit at 6 assists tops. Like that's, I don't see him going full blown like amazing. Like no.
You kind of alluded to it. Do you think he, you know, kind of disappoints because the Bucks team is bad, or do you think he would disappoint just because there was so much hype?
I
just think it's the whole team. Like, and the best thing, you can't forget about Dellavedova's defense, Dave, because he's all over the balls, all the balls out there with his hands. But
man, it's vicious, but that was clean.
It's going to be basically just an overall team where it's like Giannis is, at the end of the year, going to be, oh, yeah, he's the best player on that team. But the Bucks team is kind of like, eh, that's not really a good team.
See, but we had Chris Middleton pretty high. Middleton's a good shooter. With Jabari Parker, we're waiting for this kid to take it. You know, he was taken so high. You want to see
injury,
this kid.
Though.
He did have an injury, but still, I mean, it's a guy who
25 games his first year, 76 his second.
Yeah, I mean, he's a power forward who's great driving to the basket, but that's the only thing he can do. He can't play defense, he can't shoot.
And
so,
his free throw percentage isn't even that high, 76% last year. Come on.
Because he can't shoot.
You have to shoot in upper 80s, minimum.
See, the thing is, you know, you want to see this
like
team
Shaq
take steps.
Or,
no, but when you make your money
Jordan.
At the line, like you say, he's a drive. Like, that's his game plan. Is
unless you're a
take
center.
The ball to the hoop.
Unless you're like a...
Exactly,
well, then you really
but he's not a center.
There's no excuse.
He's not a center.
Under
80%. He's a 6'9 power forward. He's skinny. Well, not skinny, but he's not a, you know, he's a built guy.
He's built like a brick shit house.
Yeah, he's a buff dude. He's not a fat kid. He's not like a, he's not an, well,
no,
Andre Drummond's not fat. Anyways.
Saying I can't shoot free throw, Sean?
No,
is
you
what
can't.
You're
fat guys can't shoot.
I can shoot pretty well, man. You'd be surprised.
Anyways. With Giannis, I think I agree with at least you, Ricky. I know you were kind of saying it was more wrong pieces, but you're also saying it was the team. I think it's going to be more of the team if Giannis cannot take that step, and if they do go away from the point forward idea.
Let me put it this way: You look at the top 6 players: LeBron, KD, Paul George, Kawhi, Butler, and Melo.
In that order,
the only single player on that top 6 that for his whole career. Hasn't had, like, he's had to be the guy on top of that team and hasn't had the right pieces to get him for hit. For
Are you
Melo,
comparing
though,
him to LeBron right
wait,
now?
Wait, wait,
oh,
no, no,
Melo?
No.
Oh.
Yeah, for Melo, it's one of those things where we're talking about him with, he hasn't had the right pieces to get to a championship. With Giannis, it could be similar to that where it's like, yeah, he could be one of these better small forwards, but he has that team just hasn't had the right pieces around him kind of a thing.
Real quick, before we get into that Carmelo, Butler, Kawhi talk, Nuggets fan will be pissed off if we don't mention Danilo Gallinari because their team doesn't get mentioned enough. Danilo Gallinari, he's that guy who is, he's a guy who it fits a specific role, but he's really good at that role. He's a good scorer. So
he stepped up last year, too.
And we might see him fall a little bit because Jokic will grow and Moody will grow. So,
him,
I mean, that's the thing.
In my rankings, him and Tobias were the ones where who do I put above who? I had Gallinari
because he did
up top,
it more.
Then I had Tobias longer. Underneath, but that was one where I'm like, who do I put above who? Because I believe Tobias had more points than Gallinari.
Nope, Gallinari had like 18, so you're wrong there. But no, well, Gallinari.
I was just saying I believe. I didn't have him up in front of me.
You're wrong. Well, Gallinari, I think we might see a dip, and he might be going down to Tobias' level because everyone around him is growing.
Especially
you got Jamal Murray.
Gary Harris.
Gary Harris. You know, there's a lot of more shooters coming into that team. Let's get into the top 6. I think New York fans have already roasted us in the comments because Carmelo is below Jimmy Butler, and they're probably saying that we are Chicago fanboys. Ricky,
I had Melo.
You had Melo before. Why'd you have Melo before?
Well, it's one of the things with Butler, or not Butler, with Melo, it was Butler's had more of a team to me. He's always had the better team around him. Melo has been one of the best players in this league since he's come into the league, and that Knicks team has never put a complete team around him.
Denver didn't either.
Outside of LeBron, KD, George, and Kawhi, I looked at it and I went, yeah, Butler's good, but Melo's a little bit better, and he hasn't had the same pieces and even the same coaches that fucking Jimmy Butler had.
See, the reason why I have Jimmy higher, and right now, I mean, if I was saying if I had to take a game, if I had one game and I either had to pick Jimmy Butler or Carmelo Anthony, I'm taking Carmelo without a doubt. The reason I have him higher is because I think Jimmy Butler has higher expectations. Because, you know, there was all this talk in the offseason, you know, is it D. Rose's team? Is it Jimmy Butler's team? All this talk through the regular season, is it Jimmy's team? Is it D. Rose's team? Can Jimmy get along with Fred Hoiberg? There's so many expectations. Now you bring in D-Wade. Now you bring in Rondo. Jimmy has to be the man, and now he has to prove it. And right now he's slotted at five.
I think you'd have him switched because of that, because you've been one of the people that have been saying for weeks about how you don't think this Bulls team's going to gel with the pieces they have. So that's why when I saw that, I was kind of surprised that you had Jimmy on top.
What I'm saying is Jimmy's younger, and Jimmy is supposedly, you know, they have similar teams right now, but Jimmy's younger, and, you know, we know what we're getting from Carmelo. Jimmy can take that jump, is what I'm saying. Jimmy might be able to be one of the best small forwards in the league, even though he's a shooting guard.
That's the thing that makes it tricky for me. He's a shooting guard by true nature, but, again, positions are just guidelines.
Let me just lay this out. Just based off of last year, Melo was about, I'm going to just use raw numbers, no rounding up, 21-7-4 guy. Jimmy was a 25-4 guy. And I know you're saying. Oh, the rebounding might be because Jimmy was more of a shooting guard last year. But Melo's had better stats in those things. But Andy didn't have a complete team.
Also, real quick, this wasn't like a Jimmy Butler by a landslide. This was very close. The reason I put Jimmy above was because Jimmy is, again, younger, and Jimmy can take that step to get to a guy who's maybe 23-7-5. Jimmy can take that jump up, and we're expecting to see a jump, but with Carmelo, we know what we're getting with Carmelo now.
He's an established player. The only thing that I was really surprised by Carmelo Anthony with was the fact that he was actually, like, he just missed out by leading his team in assists. He has kind of grown past that whole I'm the ultimate ball stopper, you know, I take all the shots.
And he's learned his place, too. As he's gotten older, he's not going to be the guy that can
part
chuck
of it
up
was they had nobody on the team.
Exactly.
I mean, it was like, who do you want him to pass it to? Random white guy number four over there?
You mean Sasa Vujicic?
Yeah, sure. Maybe the veteran savviness of Jose Calderon.
Put some respect on it.
God damn
it's
11.
Okay. Yeah, it's getting late here. But no, look, Carmelo, he now has the all-star team of 2011. He is loaded up.
Of 2011.
He's going to go for like, he's probably going to drop in points. He'll probably be like 26 and 5. I'll say it, 26 and 5.
Melo also has had injury problems too, so we can't also expect Melo to play a full season.
Melo may choose to take games off. I'm just saying. I'm not calling him soft, but
Melo's
soft.
Never played. Melo's soft.
And just
soft?
Just to cement a point that I did make earlier, and this is why to me Butler's had a little bit more to lean on. Butler comes in 2011. Tom Thibodeau's his coach until Hoiberg last year. Melo comes in.
I'm not saying Butler hasn't had it easier.
I know.
Now
just
Butler's
to New York,
thrown in the fire. That's what
but
I'm saying.
Just to New York, because Melo came into New York that same year. Here's the coaches he's had:
D'Antoni.
Mike D'Antoni, Mike Woodson, Derek Fisher, and then Rambis, and now Hornacek.
Well, no, but what I'm saying is Melo's been thrown in the fire.
Yeah.
Melo's gone through the ringer.
But he chose it.
Melo doesn't have anything to lose. Melo's not going to slip. Melo's not going to fall out of this top six.
Mm-hmm.
Jimmy can. So I'm saying Jimmy is above Melo right now because we expect him to be better.
Right.
He has more expectations. I'm not saying that Melo's not a better player than Jimmy Butler. Right now, Carmelo's a better player. I'm not saying that.
Melo's a better scorer. Jimmy's a better defender. It kind of meets somewhere in the middle.
Exactly. You're splitting hairs, but right now I put Jimmy over because we expect him to be better than a 32-year-old.
So you're going more off of expectation
and
rather
potential.
Than where they
and
are.
The eyes on his team.
Expectations and potential.
Yeah, okay.
It's kind of like the Ben Simmons-Wiggins thing.
For me, I was going right now, start of the season, who's at the top. So that's why I have Melo
above. That's the
same thing.
Melo will probably end up at five. Melo's going to end up around five or six. And the only way he stays at six is if Jimmy actually lives up to that hype, or if Wiggins somehow takes over him. But I don't think any of that's going to happen. I think Melo's going to end up at the end. But right now, you're looking at Jimmy Butler to be the guy. You're looking at Jimmy Butler to be the third best player in the East or in that area. You need him to be up there with Paul George. You need him to be up there with LeBron. You need him to be able to compete. Where with Melo, we know he can do that. We know Melo can do that.
He ain't going to win, but he can do it.
Yeah, because it's different teams. That's the thing. Melo can beat LeBron. I mean, Melo's got 3 gold medals. Doesn't matter.
Gold medals matter more. Remember that?
Dude, nobody needs those rings when I got these gold.
I think the thing is that Jimmy has more expectations, but Jimmy has more to lose. Carmelo is going to stay there. We know what Melo can do. Melo's a fantastic player, and I'm not trying to take anything away from Melo by putting him a little lower. I'm just saying that Melo, we know what we're going to get from him. Jimmy, we have more expectations for him, so we expect him to be the better player.
Mm-hmm.
So he's going to have to prove that.
Yeah, and on my side, you say we know what we're getting from Melo. I'm saying, yep, and I'm putting that right above
Jimmy. And that's
Jimmy.
Fair. Again, it wasn't like it was a Jimmy by a landslide. Yeah, it was very close.
Very close, except and then the top four was, or the top five, whatever number it is, those guys were above Jimmy and Melo by landslide.
The top four with Kawhi at 4, Paul George at 3, KD at 2, and LeBron at number 1. LeBron cemented at number 1, without a doubt. We don't need
best
to really talk about
in
that.
Look, NBA.
You could just pick a position, put LeBron at 1, and I'd be like, okay, that works.
I wouldn't argue with that. I
mean, best overall player.
Like you said.
Across the board, he is an athletic freak who, along the lines, we've never seen anything like him. So, I mean, he's got all the skills you need. He's got everything. He's in his own class.
LeBron doesn't need to play the regular season. LeBron doesn't need to play the first two rounds of the playoffs.
AI, like we talk about practice, like that's pretty much everything minus the finals.
LeBron's final performance in the finals is one of the greatest performances we've seen ever. I mean, honestly, like he's up there with Jordan in the finals. He's up there with you know, the old days of Wilt. I mean, this was insane. Up there with the days of Magic. LeBron is more fighting of where am I going to end up at the end of my career than right now, because we all know that LeBron's the best player in the NBA. But now with 2 through 4, KD, easily the best scorer in the NBA. Paul George, the prototypical small forward, like you said. Yep. Kawhi, the best defender. What was your take on this? Why did you have KD, Paul George, and Kawhi? Because we all had it the same.
Bottom up. Look, Kawhi is, like, he couldn't have had it better coming into the league. He had the best coach in Pop from day one. Then he comes into a team that has veteran leadership written all over it, and he's picked up so much from the likes of Tim Duncan, and he just kind of, even like, shit, the guards there. They've got Euro players who have that life experience. He's a young kid. He comes in, and he gets to learn all this stuff from them. He even picked up the Euro step, which is just hilarious to watch him do. But no, he's a lockdown defender. 1 through 5, you can put him across the board. He's got ridiculous wingspan, so he can guard anybody. I mean, the big thing with Kawhi is, like, they went out and got LaMarcus Aldridge, which makes you go, is he not the guy? Does he need somebody else to step up in big moments? Because he's not that guy for this team. And that's why I've got him at 4. He is, again, we're no discredit. He's a fantastic player, a top 4 small forward in the league.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, you got to wonder, like, I know it was a great pickup just because it was like, hey, who wouldn't want LaMarcus Aldridge on the team? But from a team direction, I kind of wonder that.
Well, Kawhi is extremely efficient. I mean, looking at his numbers, 50% from the field, 44% from 3, 87% from the free throw line. But the reason I had him lower was because as how fantastic he is this defense on defense. Paul George isn't a schmoke or isn't bad on defense. I mean, Paul George
he was
is
like
a fantastic,
number 2 statistically to Kawhi.
Yeah, exactly. I think I would probably put him in the top 5 of defenders. I mean, Paul George is a fantastic defender, but then you look, Paul George has better rebound numbers, he has better assist numbers. He is just more of the all-around player. With Kawhi, he's still kind of stepping into that game where he can be really efficient from the field, but can he actually put up more than 21 a night? Can he get up to that 24 level where Paul George is around?
It's as simple as this. Maybe this goes a little bit of what Dave was saying, but you take Kawhi out of the Spurs. Maybe a little bit different from this year to last year because Duncan's not on this upcoming year's team. He was last year. Take Kawhi away from the Spurs. I'm confident to say the Spurs are still the Spurs.
I disagree with that.
You take Paul George. Wait. You take Paul George away from the Pacers. They're nowhere near what they are, and that is why Paul George, to me,
the equivalent
is
of, like,
above
average
Leonard.
Wins of a replacement.
Yeah, yeah.
It's, that's what you're going for.
It's George is worth more to the Pacers than Kawhi's good, but that system, that team, he's just a piece in there.
Paul George was the identity of this Pacers team, and in the meantime,
I think that's
what
you're kind of alluding to. Well,
it's kind of
I think that's what kind of you're alluding to. Well, why do you need LaMarcus when you got Kawhi? But
it's kind of like it's on a way lesser scale with the Pacers. But it's like, look at when LeBron left Cleveland. Cleveland was terrible. LeBron comes back, Cleveland's back to where they were. That's what it is with Paul George and Indy. And, like, yeah, the Spurs will take a hit if you take away Kawhi, but it's not as—
I think they wouldn't be a playoff team.
But it's not as big as a hit if you took Paul George away from the Pacers.
I see where you're going with. And again, the reason why I have Paul George over is because he is just more of the all-around player. He can dish it out. He can rebound for you. He can play defense, and he's a better scorer than Kawhi. I think if Kawhi can get up to that 24-point-per-game level, then it will be, all right, now who is better, Paul George or Kawhi, because Kawhi has the defense, and now they have similar numbers offensively. And you know, these guys are the guys.
The thing, though, with the points per game, though, could you really say, could someone come out and say, well, Kawhi had a lot of other scoring pieces, and Paul George is that team?
Well, that's what I'm trying to say now is now, you know, Tim Duncan isn't there anymore. Yeah. Now Kawhi will have to be the guy.
And I mean,
again, while he was extremely efficient.
Manu and Tony Parker are another year
they're
older.
They're declining,
So his role needs to be stepped up. So you've got to look towards him and LaMarcus Aldridge really taking over this team. And I want to see him rather than LaMarcus Aldridge, because we've seen what LaMarcus Aldridge can do on a team when it's just him or just him and a point, and it's like, good, not great.
Mm-hmm.
What Kawhi could do could be something we haven't seen before.
Kawhi could be on the second-best team in the West and not really... I mean, he was in the MVP race last year, but then again, it was a far third. It was Steph and LeBron. But the thing with Paul George is I can see him being in competition for MVP outside of a guy like Kawhi, where Kawhi might be hidden behind his teammates as well. And then finally, Kevin Durant, talking about a more of a diminished role here. He's not going to be the guy in Oklahoma City. He wasn't really truly the guy with Russell Westbrook, but now he's going to be playing with
Clay. Well, I mean, Russ didn't think so, but maybe he did.
Yeah, he's not going to be playing with... Now he's going to be playing with Clay, Steph, and Draymond. Is KD still the number two? You know, can he take a step back if he doesn't put up KD numbers? Do you think KD's in threat by with PG-13 creeping up behind him?
PG-13. Maybe, but I would think Paul George would have to step up his numbers a little bit to overtake.
How far do you see KD's stats falling is my question.
See, I don't see them falling that much, but they may fall a little just because you're now adding another scorer on top of Klay Thompson and Steph Curry.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
You're adding another guy who can score the ball, so it's really who's going to take most of the shots, and really KD maybe. To me, it's Curry's that number one option. Klay's the number two, and KD's stepping in there to be the three.
But like, you think KD's the third option?
Yeah, I would be
behind Klay?
I think he bumps
maybe
Klay.
Those two kind of. It depends on which night it is. Who's got the hotter hand? Those two switch.
KD's the best scorer in the NBA.
Because I was just like,
KD's the best scorer in the NBA.
I'm not saying he's not. I'm just saying that team is so loaded to where one night it could be Steph, one night it could be a Klay, the other night
he's not
going to
be the focal point of the offense.
No, he's not.
He's going to be a part of the offense.
Yes.
Yeah. Yep.
Because it's a true, to me, I look at the Warriors
that's
and it's a true
phrase.
System.
Look, the good thing here is there are four quarters and Steph only needs to play three. That's what you got to remember at the end of the day. Because, look, this team was a team that was very deep last year, and then you got to use those bench guys to soak up some minutes and some blowouts. Mm-hmm. It ain't going to get any prettier this year for teams. He's going to go in there and he's going to get his time. He's going to probably lose maybe two shots, maybe three shots a night. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm still talking. He's putting up points like crazy.
But it's all if they're winning, it ain't going to matter.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, he's I don't care about my own numbers game. I want to win a ring and have fun, which is fine. I respect that.
Well,
but
it's because
same time,
look at where he came from. Yeah, he was putting up numbers in OKC. Yeah, they got places. But when they got to the finals, Western Conference finals, they didn't win.
Right. But same time, talk about a player's legacy. And I have to wonder, like, he's kind of taken a step back because he could have been, like, on par to go with, like, the number one scorer of all time.
I think with him, the legacy thing matters more to us than it does to him.
I think you're right.
Because
I think he won't be.
KD, at this point, if he ends up with one ring, we could talk legacy blue in the face to him. He's going to say, yeah, I won a championship.
And I had fun doing it.
Yeah.
I think that's
Melo didn't win one.
But Mel got three gold medals, sir. Yeah. Three gold medals.
Well, Katie's still got time.
Charles didn't win one. And according to Charles, God wanted him to win that championship.
I think that's a fair way to put it. I just want to ask one more question. And it's really the gap between one and two. Is there that much of a gap between LeBron and KD now? And is there that much of a gap between KD and PG-13 and Kawhi? Is there a huge gap, or is it tight between some and...
The gap between KD and PG is closer than LeBron. LeBron is number one. LeBron is number one. On this list, he's number one. No question.
I don't think anyone's questioning that, but...
Yeah.
I want to say the gap between Paul George and KD is very small, and I think it's getting smaller because of his new role on this team. Mm-hmm. I think Paul George, they assembled a fantastic supporting cast around him that reminds me very much of that Mavericks team that went deep and won a championship a couple years back. But again, Paul George is my go-to. Like, what's a small forward? It's Paul George. Like, he is a slightly worse version than LeBron James, and I mean that in the truest sense, slightly. Kevin Durant is a scoring phenomenon, like transcendent levels of shooting, scoring all around, crazy build. But at the same time, I kind of want him to be more than what he wants to be.
Yeah.
And I feel like I'm always going to be a little disappointed that he doesn't have that thing to take it himself, and he's going to take a second role on his own team. Yeah, or on someone else's team, I should say.
With KD, he is the ultimate scorer. With Paul George, he is the ultimate small forward. With LeBron, he's the ultimate basketball player.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I would say that the difference between ultimate scorer and ultimate small forward is a closer gap. And I maybe it might be recency bias with, you know, KD going to a team where he isn't going to be the guy anymore, or he isn't going to be the guy.
We assume that. He could come out and be the number one guy
on
that
team. Yeah.
And Stephen Clay just stand on the three line and just jack up shots.
We'll see.
But that's the thing about that thing. About that team, if that happens, Steph and Clay sit there going, "You shoot, man. You shoot. We'll be your biggest cheerleaders."
And by 3-point line, I mean about 18 feet behind it, because they don't give a fuck as long as they're in the gym.
Steph's already got the 3-point record.
Steph's like inbounder, just handed to me. Shot, it's in.
I mean, that's where that team's at. That's gonna make the biggest thing though, is how the Warriors decide they're gonna play as a team. Because as much as they're going to say, like, it doesn't matter to us, team ball, whatever, they're going to default to somebody at the point they need a win. And that's what I want to see.
If they're going to be a great team, though, I think it comes down to, who do we default to? Any of us three, whoever's open.
Does that gap close if KD wins a title and looks like the number one player on the Warriors this year?
KD to LeBron.
The KD to LeBron one.
No, LeBron is the best. Unless LeBron has a season like Jordan with the Wizards.
Yeah, that's
tarnishing. Yeah.
Not going to happen. So LeBron's.
Well, I'm
one.
Saying KD comes in here and he puts up.
If KD Tanya Harding's LeBron's game, then KD's got a chance.
I'm saying this. KD wins the MVP. They set the record again. KD comes in. He puts up 32 in the regular season.
Yeah,
something
it's hard
stupid
to say
like
no.
That definitely closes that gap. It's a stretch. 32 in the regular season, plays up to his ability in the playoffs because he hasn't really done that, and then
crunch time
goes in
matters,
and
cause that's what
puts out LeBron
sure,
in the finals.
It moves like maybe fucking.
But if he puts out LeBron in the finals,
it moves in
if
Adam. However,
if it's
big
KD
an Adam
and
is,
the Warriors,
look, he has consistently lost to LeBron over and over. So if he gets over that hump by him. Now, I'm not saying by himself because that's impossible. But
if it's KD and the Warriors getting over LeBron, do you think that gap tightens?
I do. I think if he puts up over 30 a night and like just absolutely mauls it, I gotta give him credit. I don't care that he's on the best team in the world, but it's still he's a fantastic player.
If rings counted in this debate, Harrison Barnes would be a lot higher than some of these people.
Wow.
Oh, what a great way to end it.
He has one ring. Look at Gallinari.
Before Ricky
Giannis
starts getting
Wiggins.
Ridiculous here, let's shut this down, boys. Yes,
so I'm just saying, rings don't really matter when it comes to this.
Let's wrap it up. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of The Fast Break. We did all shooting guards, all small forwards.
Shooting guards was last week.
Shooting guards was last week. Hey, it's 11:30.
Well, I mean, Jimmy Butler is a shooting guard.
We did all small forwards.
He's going to be a small forward on this team, though. But
we did all small forwards this week. Thank you so much for listening. If you're listening on Blog Talk Radio, thank you for checking us out. If you're on SoundCloud, move over to Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk blogtalkradio.com/mostvaluablepodcast. Check us out on there. That's where we will be from October 1st, 2016. And on, if you're listening on YouTube, hit that like button, hit that subscribe button. Do not forget to do those. Those help us out so much. And also check out our Patreon page, patreon.com/mostvaluablepodcast, talking about helping us out. If you want to help us out the extra length, the little bit more, check out patreon.com. Our social medias are in the description down below, but that's going to wrap it up for Dave and Ricky. I'm Sean, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you for listening to this MVP podcast. Follow us on Twitter @MostValuablePod for more great podcasts.